spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to 3CR Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands of Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Spoken word and poetry come from the heart and touch all the topics peculiar to the human condition. As such, there may be content in this show that could cause distress. Please practice self-care when listening and speak to someone if you need to. For the next half an hour, I'm going to be interviewing Benjamin Theolonius Sanders. Benjamin Theolonius Sanders, IQ, is a native Memphis griot, professional teaching artist, intergenerational educator, intercontinental slam champion, DJ, photographer and father. The former MC of the Memphis Music and Heritage Festival, an 8 times Memphis Slam champion and 2 times Melbourne Slam champion, IQ is a haiku lover and typewriter devotee. In 2009, he was one of 12 guests at WOM Adelaide, where his poetry was translated into Indigenous language in collaboration with visual artists from the APY lands. IQ is the author of 11 chapbooks, 3 albums, 2 audio anthologies, and has been anthologised in various academic and commercial publications over the last 30-plus years. Normally referred to as a Memphis Poet Laureate, IQ loves music, coffee, Scrabble, teaching about poetry of all kinds, tennis, Memphis and Geelong. Presently the Poet Laureate of the Centre for the Southern Folklore, IQ is a hyphenated American, as well as Poet Laureate of legendary Memphis jam band Free World. When his feet are not walking in M-Town, IQ lives on Wadawurrung country. Welcome to the show, IQ.
Thank you, Johnny.
Wow, what a phenomenal bio. I so feel like I'm in the presence of a poetry legend.
It'll be nice to be called that at some point in time, but I've been fortunate enough to meet some people who I venerate as legends and their elders, and yeah, I'm hoping to be in their company someday.
Okay, well, I think you're well on the way with that amazing life of poetry and creativity and all the incredible things that you've done. And I guess what I'm curious about first up is, where does that moniker IQ come from?
It comes from making the mistake of watching Jeopardy in public. I got given the nickname High IQ after basically not missing almost any questions for a week. And I just decided to keep it when they asked me for my nickname at my first major poetry slam. I said my nickname was IQ, and that's all that people remembered. And it was good going to classrooms and working with kids and them being able to see someone who's an athlete in several forms, but who also didn't mind being a nerd, if you will, or somebody who loved books. So, yeah, most people just call me IQ.
So do you feel like being an athlete and writing the poetry, then you'll make it more accessible for other people?
It sometimes demystifies it. I never believed that there was that full dichotomy that had to exist between people who were athletic and people who were sticking their heads in books, which seemed like 24/7. You know, I used to take books to the baseball dugout when I was a kid, you know, and whether it be me hearing the words on the radio or me seeing snatches of commercials or me reading the Bible because I was a preacher's kid and also went to Catholic school, I always felt that to be a complete human being, you should be able to embrace all those different parts of yourself. During the 80s, obviously, people, nerd was a bad connotation, but we all love the nerds when they fix our hearts or they make us an amazing car. But, you know, it just seemed a natural thing to just enjoy being called intelligent. I didn't see that as a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not. Why should it be a bad thing? Smart. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you owned it. That's awesome. And paved that way for people, you know, to know that you can be more than one thing, right? Well,
and it was wild because of Australia. I first came to tennis, you know, because of Australia, which was, at that time in Memphis especially, it was a weird thing for one of the best athletes in school to play a sport that wasn't just basketball or gridiron, you know, American football or running track. I'd like to give a shout out to Pat Cash because, you know, you're part of the reason why I play tennis. So thank you, Australia.
Yeah, wow, there you go. Well, that's awesome. So even when you were living in Memphis, you still had this connection to Australia.
Yeah, and it only deepened because of coffee, becoming a barista. And then also, you know, half of the tennis team at the University of Memphis were Aussies. And the major tennis tournament that was played in Memphis, there's the ATP stop. I met the Woodies, I met Zan Installi, I met, what's his name, Darren Cahill. And they all were really, really nice to me. as a ball boy. And I was like, it kind of always stuck in my head. And then, you know, you watch the show on TV and there would be the Melbourne on the court. And Pete Sampras was my favorite player. So I got to see him, you know, standing in Melbourne a fair bit. And so, yeah, Australia was always kind of, I think, in the background.
Did you ever think you would end up here?
Well, I never thought I would end up in the U.S. 24/7 or all my life. I found it a strange behavior with my fellow Americans to enjoy the benefit of so many cultural things coming from around the world. But then they rarely, to me, make the effort to go see those cultures in their original form. So it's a bit like you want to buy the spice at the grocery store, but you would never go to the place where the spice comes from. My mom was a social studies teacher, so I wanted to travel. And I always loved the accent when I heard it. And was curious. It just seemed to be another place that had a different type of English, but that also had incredible natural beauty. And I think, and I still think this, Australia has a lot to offer the world. And so, you know, when I'm abroad, I try to be a bit of an ambassador for, you know, I live in Geelong now, but I used to live in Brunswick. And this was before Beyonce showed up. So I try my best to give them a good look, see at Australia and not just talk about koalas and kangaroos.
Yeah, of course. Or crocodiles.
Yeah. They love Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, how about we hear one of your great poems?
We'll start with a small latte and jam, if we can. Send this out to my father, so I'm going to send this out to my daughter, Lillian. All is not changed. Her face still lights up when a jam donut lands on a saucer. There are traces where the pram smushed cheeks nap, visible as each growing pain rings in a new year. Tomorrow, school begins formally. But is tomorrow really when parents let go? This morning, she said it, the kids' table. She wanted to sit with them. Adulthood is a distant bank. I am on an island, on that island, eating my croissant alone. One jam donut can change our relationship. Momentarily, I can remain her favorite, a universally reassuring heartbeat. All is not changed, but her hands, her eyes, her dance is more angelic. I am her father. Co-author of her eyelashes, co-author of her soul frame. I am, remain, her teacher, her dad. I am my daughter's watcher and still her friend.
Oh, what a beautiful ending to that poem. It was so poignant. I can just picture you there in the cafe with your daughter and her little face lighting up when she gets a jam donut.
I was at O'Hay's in North Coburg, so yeah.
That's just incredible to think about that poem captured that moment in time so that you can go back and revisit it whenever you want.
I think a lot of people who write poems or begin to come to poems, it's a way of slowing down the world and having an emotionally charged dropping pinpoint in their life so they can remember accurately and with passion what they were doing or where they were at times. So yeah, I'm a dad, and I think all parents at some point in time look at their kids and want to remember them as they saw them at that time.
Yeah, and photos are one way of doing that, but I think there's something powerful in poetry because a photo is kind of this like split second image of a moment, whereas a poem you can bring more into it, you know. You can have, I don't know, sounds coming in and tastes and things that are kept out of an image.
Well, there's a layering that takes place. For example, I mean, you're using one sense, the visual part, when you're staring at a photo, but are you able to recall the sounds around, or, you know, the other senses? The poems can give you that.
Yeah. I'm wondering, with your poems, when you started writing and why you started writing?
I think it started as, one, I love the sounds of words. Two, it was, in, for me, often the quiet time of the day where I could decompress. And oddly enough, it's funny, I'm having a cup of tea right now. I would boil the kettle, have a cup of tea, and for that moment, quiet moment in the evening, after everyone was asleep, I could hear my own thoughts. And for me, it was, I was enjoying the music of my own emotions through language.
I like that, enjoying the music of your emotions through language.
I think I hear language as a music. When I was getting to be at Warm Adelaide, hearing the Pigeon Jar was amazing to me. I think it's also why I like Espanol, Lietuviske, Lithuanian. Yeah, and listen, I was fortunate enough to study world music at uni, and in world music, Indian music, jazz, everything I could devour sonically, I was trying to.
You're a sonic devourer. Wow, that just sounds awesome, as well as a typewriter devotee.
Oh, it's a great sound. It's a great sound.
yeah, wow. So, Warm Adelaide, tell us a bit more about that experience.
They made a call for artists, and they chose 12. I went as a poet and as a recording artist, and actually wrote haiku based off three of the most important indigenous, I think, creation and cultural stories that are, I think, fairly universal amongst the indigenous here in Australia, or the Anangu. So I responded by writing haiku that retold the stories. So it's a challenge to do it in 17 syllables, but to cut to the essence via economy of syllables, that was a fun thing to do. And so after hearing the enmas and actually looking at the art being created right in front of me, I chose in the installation to write the haiku in Pigeon Jar on the actual dirt or sand, and people got to walk over it. So it was as if honoring the permanence, but at the same time, the impermanence of our time here. We are custodians, we are stewards briefly of things much more ancient than we are. And to see the artists smile when the haikus are read to them in their language, it made me feel like I come close to accomplishing, you know, capturing their stories.
That sounds incredible. Do you have one of those haikus?
I don't have one of those with me. So sorry. Not one of those.
You have got a haiku, perhaps?
Yes, I do.
Great.
I'll do a couple. I'll start with one that I believe was from my time being in cafes in Brunswick. The haiku is called Maturity. Hot cups of coffee are insurance policies for Melburnians. The second one, conversation piece. Winter, spring, summer. Why do we fall for these names? Melbourne weather. Done.
Kafirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kafir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufiyas.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Hi, I'm Indrani Pereira, and you're listening to Radio 3CR 855 on the AM dial. I'm interviewing poet IQ, and before the break, you heard IQ with his haiku. Nice little rhyme there, accidentally. And he gave us two haiku. We had Maturity and Conversation Piece. And IQ, I'm curious, when I read out your bio, you mentioned that you were a Memphis griot, and I'm not familiar with that term.
Griot, essentially, you are the walking, living embodiment of your culture. I am an amalgam of Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama. But distinctly, I'm a Memphis kid. You know, you are poet, scholar, librarian. I sang in choirs for over 30 years. So I've got my cultural footprint, my ethos, my DNA is Memphis. So let's say you don't understand Memphis. I should be able to translate that to you. I can do that sonically, the different accents that Memphis has. There are different generations that I've been around from my hometown. So everything from blues music to gospel to soul, but then also the rhythm of how people walk. You actually are the embodiment of your culture. So I've got over 50 years of stories from Memphis in my body. And when I walk, and I've taught in Memphis for over 30 years, you are constantly soaking up your culture. So you griot, the best way I can describe it is you are an authentic ambassador of your culture.
That sounds incredible. That sounds amazing. And you said, I think, that you've had 30 years in choirs. Is that right?
Yep. I used to be in choir. And so at school, all the way through uni, every type of choir, chamber chorus, you know, solo and ensemble, the men's chorus. Then there's choirs at school, and then there were the choirs at church, at Mississippi Boulevard Christian Church. So we actually started a gospel choir at Middlebury because people want to learn about it. So, yeah, I mean, I've got these old hymns in my body that, and the sound of old country churches that all the way from Alabama probably to Oklahoma. Yeah.
And does that influence your writing, that sound and that rhythm?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dr. William Herbert Brewster and Lucy Campbell were two absolute influences. I mean, the something within the words are preachers and teachers would make their appeal, fighting as soldiers on great battlefields. When to their pleading my poor heart did yield, all that I know is there's something within. But, you know, to hear that sung, or for example, Herbert Brewster, move on up a little higher, people know Mahalia Jackson for the singing, but he wrote the lyrics, the poem. Mm. So it's always there. It's like blues and jazz music and soul and gospel and country. The lyricism available and the stories, the depth of the storytelling and the impassion, if you want to call it the articulation of the soul that comes from the music, it's undeniable. It's like you can't not want to move when you hear an Al Green, Love and Happiness. The organ talks to you.
So then do you take that musical background and put it into albums? Because in your bio, you said that you've got albums, three albums, I think.
Yeah, the first one was called Poet IQ Under the Full Moon. The second one was called Somewhere in Memphis. The third, the compilation that I recorded here in Melbourne was Project 3056, A Pint for Your Mind. So, yeah, those influences absolutely come out. In fact, my first major slam poem that people knew me for was a poem called Slide on Beale Street, where I actually become the guitar and become the drunk people who used to dance to the music on Beale Street. But, you know, you can't have an instrument in the slam, so you have to be the instrument. So my voice goes. And, you know, you go channel the people who dance. Say, my baby, don't let me such a long time ago. But these are people I grew up listening to on front porches. So, again, I think it's worthwhile to honor our elders and to soak up as much of where you live as possible so that you can gift that culturally to people who may have never been to your hometown.
I just had chills listening to you singing then and to you being the instrument. I mean, that would have been phenomenal hearing you perform that poem at that slam.
Well, I almost got arrested in Vancouver because they asked me to, they liked the poem. They wanted me to perform it in front of the hotel and the cops came by and I was in full performance mode. I didn't realize it. And so they had to tell him, no, he's doing a poem. That was quite a funny thing, you know, to see take place. But yeah, you know, I was listening to Paul Robeson today. Sweet Lord, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. You know, so you can catch me at home doing Paul Robeson at one moment and then Jet, Are You Gonna Be My Girl? Next.
I love it. I love it. You bring in Memphis to Nam and Nam to Memphis. You're going back and forth.
Yeah, they're both beautiful places. And where I live now in Geelong, it's an amazing place as well. Learning much more about its, you know, contribution to the rock scene in Australia and really hoping that people start to nurture more live music venues because, you know, it's horrible not to have those incubators and they really reflect the life around you. Yeah.
Absolutely. And look, I know that you've got an album. You've got it sitting here on the desk in the studio. Can you tell us about this album?
Yeah. So in 1987, a band was created called Free World. Two super cool, I call them hippie white guys, Dave Skypeck and Richard Cushing, approached the late, great Dr. Herman Green. So Herman Green was a saxophonist for Lionel Hampton, and his dad played in W.C. Handy, the father of the blues, actual band. So he told him, I'll teach you how to play straight jazz, and then we'll start a band. And so this is the album. The album's called More Love. It's Free World's, I believe, eighth studio album. And I was lucky enough to be asked by the guys to write a poem and send it back to them. And so 1111 on Beale Street was the track that kind of fulfilled a bit of a childhood dream to walk in and see our album right next to Bo Diddley's album in the record store at Ghana Records. Oh, that was a good moment. So thank you so much, Free World, for all you guys have taught me. God bless you forever, Dr. Herman Green. Yeah, Free World, they perform every Sunday night on Beale Street at the Blue City Band Box right across from B.B. King's. So, you know, you'll probably find some video of me on stage with them. They go from anywhere from 5-piece to 9 and 10 pieces. Sometimes even they'll have a sitar on stage. So, it's a magical thing and very much a Memphis band.
It sounds magical. And speaking of words and poems, you're talking about sending in a poem to Free World. Have you got one you can share with us?
I'll share one. This is a poem written, a fairly recent one. It's a series of haikus, actually. Please, my dear neighbor, please lower your handgun. My hands clasp to pray. Pray for our children, we who have never known peace. Please entreat with me. Let us pray for calm, clarity, and empathy. Good coffee for all. A round of silence where the voice of our oceans soar into one song. Let us be wildings, embracing natural dreaming, above none, with all. We build our futures with hope's mortar, bricks of keystones of loving. Please, my dear neighbor, please melt down your new shotgun. Let us breathe in peace.
It would be a much better place if everybody melted their shotguns down.
Yeah, I don't normally shout out at really old white politicians, but I'm going to give a shout out to John Howard, because to have lived in Australia for now 17 years and to realize the gravity of him saying, we do not need assault weapons here. I'm thankful that my children have never known a live shooter drill. I'm thankful that here in Australia, I believe we are showing the rest of the world that to embody mateship includes being respectful of peace, and you don't need guns. I love you, USA, but the guns are kind of getting to me now.
Yeah, I hear you 100%. And yeah, agree completely on the subject. So just to switch gears a little bit,
yeah,
and get back to the fact that you're this incredible poet with this amazing back catalogue, I'm wondering about your slam poetry, because you've won so many slams.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it now, and slam for me is a discipline. I'm a poet who came to slam with a bit of an edge, because when you're raised in a black American church down south, you are getting taught about performance every week. And I had to go as a preacher's kid to so many different types of churches, so I got to hear different types of oratory. And the King James Version, which is basically a book of poems and poems, proverbs, and stories, and letters, the language and the way people speak, you know, you are being taught about the performance, and also just construction for slam stuff. The three-part sermon is a great foundation. So I used to drive to Hot Springs, the Spa City Slam. We had slam every week in Memphis for a while. And I've been lucky enough to go to regionals, nationals, world championships in 2007 in Vancouver. I find slam to be great because you get to be your uber self. The outrageous stuff you can't say at work, you can say at a poetry slam. You can actually find that beautiful place between paginated poetry and pure performance on the stage. So it's almost going back to the birthplace of acting, if you will. You have to write your own stuff, but then you get a chance to perform that in a way that takes people in the audience directly back to when you wrote it. And thank you, Slam Pappy, Mark Kelly Smith. The idea at a slam is, one, I tell people, make it a poetry party. Bring your best poems. Have fun sharing them with other people. Listen intently to their poems as well, because you are helping each other become better, and you're there to celebrate the word and the word given pure flesh and dancing. That's what you're there for. So you get to think, sometimes people drink, and you get to walk away being changed, hopefully.
Have you got a slam poem that you can share with us?
I actually share one that was done at the Nationals, actually. It's called For What It's Worth. It's actually in the Deaf Poetry Jam anthology. Agnus Dei qui tollis peccata mundi dona eius requiem. For What It's Worth, to His Excellency Pope John Paul II. Galileo is laughing at you from on high.
over a millennium late. Your apology is too expensive and nothing. Nothing from the Vatican is free. You want me to take you seriously, Johnny? Give me back my language. Resurrect the murdered Mithrix and give them Sunday once more. Make the Madonna and baby Jesus look like me again. Keep your apology and pawn your golden robes. Give your stolen riches to the poor. Canonize my martyr culture and remove that bearded white man from my dreams so I don't spend eternity toiling in his vineyard. I wonder if heaven's got a cotton gin for all those long white robes the saints go marching in? Do I get to sit next to you, Johnny, or have you got another prepared apology for me in heaven? Will you tell me to take my pyrite bowl and eat at heaven's back door? Must I lift holy hands to Hitler, Johnny, and be marked by you, cursed again, the son of Ham? Your cross burns Negro spirituals and changes lyrics to his yoke is easy and his burdens are white. I don't want your apology, Johnny. Give me your beanie. I'll pawn it for Fiesta wear and McDonald's french fries or maybe a rap from the rapper on Union Avenue to break with broken urban realities, living death row fantasies of cash money reigns, burning incense at ghetto tier incense at Tupac's tomb. Galileo's laughing at your apology, Johnny. He's laughing at you. He's laughing as he pours one out. He's laughing as he pours a 40 out for Copernicus's children. Keep your apologies, Johnny. The earth is still spinning, and I am unmoved.
You just heard Poet IQ with his poem, Incredible Slam Poetry Poem. What was that one called?
It was called For What It's Worth. It was written the week that the Vatican essentially apologized for slavery. So I wrote that poem from the standpoint of somebody who didn't really feel the apology. But
Yeah, 100%. I could speak to you for hours and hours, but unfortunately we've come to the end of the show.
Oh, no. It's been fun talking with you, Andrani.
It's been awesome. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in today to 3CR Spoken Word Show, 855 on the AM dial. I'm Indrani Pereira, my fabulous guest, Benjamin Theolonius Sanders, or Poet IQ.
Thank you. Yeah.
And if you enjoyed hearing this episode, you can play it again on our podcast page, where you also find an extensive archive of spoken word. And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more spoken word goodness.